We're learning about flood insurance here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Flood insurance covers what's inside the home. Most homeowners and renters' policies don't cover losses from floods. And over the past several years, 20 counties in Wisconsin have received federal disaster declarations due to flooding. So has your home flooded before? When did it happen? And were you insured? Did you move because of it? We're at 800-642-1234. Michelle Staff is the Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
So you work closely with FEMA and talk with people all over the state about flood insurance. Where in Wisconsin are more people buying flood insurance right now?
Well, we're seeing a lot of activity in the Dane County area and the La Crosse area. But honestly, I've been seeing a lot of inquiries, a lot of questions about flood insurance actually across our state with a lot of high water and a lot of rain lately.
What are the biggest questions that you get about flood insurance?
The biggest questions I get about flood insurance is the cost. And it's really hard to tell what the cost is because it's very specific on the home itself and how much people really want to cover in their home and how much they want to cover of their home. I try to explain to the public that flood insurance is just like car insurance or any other insurance. You kind of tell how much you want to have covered and what you want to have covered. So it's really hard to tell them exactly how much it's going to cost, but on the national average, the cost of flood insurance per year is around $900. But again, that's the national average. And the other question I get is I can't get flood insurance because I'm not in a floodplain and a high-risk area. And that's another myth that a lot of people think about. You can get flood insurance anywhere in a high-risk area or outside of a high-risk area. And if you are outside of that high-risk area, it's actually lower than it drops around the average is around $300 per year.
So help us understand, what is the National Flood Insurance Program?
It's a program that was created in 1968, and what the program aimed to do was to offer flood insurance to homeowners across the nation due to the fact that a lot of insurance companies weren't covering it. And so the program started that way. It's kind of a three-tiered program. It's not only flood insurance, it's also flood mitigation and also floodplain management. So there's three aspects to the program, but it's centering around that flood insurance main component to try to have the homeowners covered because, you know, 1 inch of water can cost a homeowner about $20,000 in damage. So it's trying to cover those losses and to help them recover from that initial loss so that they can move on with their life.
We're talking with Michelle Staff. She is the Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator at the DNR. You can join in. Have you seen a lot of rain where you live this year? Are you concerned about future flooding? Are you looking for flood insurance and taking that step? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, how do you know if your community is part of the National Flood Insurance Program?
So there's a couple ways you can know this. I first want to say we have in the state of Wisconsin about 563 communities that do participate. We only have about 60 communities that do not participate in the program. So 90% of the state is in the program. So we do have some communities that aren't. And on FEMA.gov, you can look up all of the communities in the nation of who is participating in the program. So it's very simple to know, but if you normally you are in it, but if there are communities wanting to get into the program, they would contact my office, actually me, and I would help them through the paperwork process.
Why would certain areas not be in the program or not qualify for this program?
Actually, everyone qualifies. All communities qualify. It's free. The caveat to the program is that when you get into the program, you are required to adopt minimum floodplain management standards. So floodplain zoning regulations that are minimum to state and federal requirements. And some of the communities don't want to do that. And that is some of the reason why. And some of the other reason is that they may not have a lot of development in the floodplain and they believe they don't need it. So those are probably the two main reasons why they want to get into the program.
Michelle, you said that just even a little bit of water, an inch of water, mm-hmm. can do thousands of dollars of damage. What does flood insurance cover?
Flood insurance covers your house. So it covers anything, I tried to explain it, attached. Electrical, foundations, walls, windows, things like that. It covers everything of the structure. So there's kind of two parts of coverage. There's coverage on the structure itself, and you can cover up to $250,000 of your structure for flood damage. And then there's also contents. So there is a contents coverage that can go up to $100,000. And that's like your personal belongings or your stove or things like that. But you would have to pay for that contents coverage. So there's two types of coverage. And then for businesses, the coverage is up to $500,000 for the structure and $500,000 for the contents. We also like to tell people, if you're a renter, you still can get flood insurance for your personal content, too, and that's up to the $100,000 also. So there's several ways to get coverage there.
I wonder if renters' policies would be less than homeowners' policies.
It may be, because you're not getting the structure, you're just getting your personal content.
And flooding can happen from, you know, a rain event, natural disasters, but also, mm-hmm. you know, a sewer backup, a water softener overflowing. Could one thing be covered but not the other?
Yeah, there are things that can be covered by your homeowners, and then there's some things that can be covered by flood insurance. Flood insurance is mainly overland flow. So it is from either a flooding source like a lake or a riverine, but it also does a lot of urban flooding. As we saw last year in the Madison area, we had a lot of urban flooding. It would cover that. And so I just tell people, again, it's like any other insurance, just make sure you know what you're getting covered for. We actually see nationwide about one out of every four claim is outside of that floodplain area. It's outside of the high-risk area, and we call that the low to moderate area. So we do see a lot of claims outside of the high-risk areas.
We're talking about flood insurance with the DNR's Michelle Staff. She's Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator. Does your community experience repeat flooding? How does that impact you? What should the state do to help? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with the DNR on flood insurance and your questions in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about flood insurance here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. People who live outside of high-risk flood areas, they file nearly a quarter of all National Flood Insurance Program flood insurance claims. And this is perspective as we learn about whether to buy flood insurance and what the policies will actually cover. Do you have flood insurance? Is it through the National Flood Insurance Program or a private insurer? How has it helped? Or did you experience flooding and you weren't properly covered? Join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Michelle Staff is the Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator at the DNR, and she stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Shelley is joining us from Burlington. Hi, Shelley. What's your situation?
My area where I live flooded in 2017. I'm in the Burlington area. And I thankfully was one of the few people in my area that has flood insurance. We are outside. We were actually just taken out of the high-risk flood area, but I kept my flood insurance anyway. One thing that it is, I love that I have it. It paid about half of my costs, and it paid for all the big-ticket items, my utilities, my furnace, you know, water heater, all of those things.
Shelley, how costly was that flood in 2017 for you?
I estimate roughly about $60,000, and I got about $30,000 from the flood insurance program.
And do you anticipate that you'll be keeping your policy even though you're out of the high-risk area?
Definitely. Definitely. I'm a hydrogeologist. I would never live where I live without having flood insurance. I'm not required to have it, but I would never live without it where I live.
Michelle,
especially going forward, it's only going to flood more often.
Yeah, Michelle, let's bring you in here. Shelley's saying it's only going to flood more often.
We're seeing a trend with a lot of wet weather and a lot of rain right now, a lot of flooding across our state.
And so for even when flood maps are updated and a home is no longer in a high-risk area, you know, Shelley didn't give up that insurance. What would you tell others?
I would tell the same thing. If you are mapped out, it doesn't mean that you are not, as you heard from the caller, doesn't mean that the water will stop at a line that's on a map. It does go past that line. And what Shelley probably experienced was her policy costs would have gone down if she was mapped out versus mapped in. But we highly encourage everyone to, if you have any risk, to get that flood insurance.
Shelley, was that the case? Yeah, you're still there. Was that the case that when you were mapped out, did your policy costs go down?
My costs went down a little bit, my premiums, yes. But, you know, it's like any insurance. It goes up every year a little bit. But one thing I wanted to stress is that, and maybe tell your person, is that it's actually very difficult to get information about the details of the program. And one thing I learned the hard way is that it does not cover any personal possessions in your basement. It will cover your utilities, your washer, dryer, and a standalone freezer, and nothing else that's in your basement.
So anything below ground.
Right.
Okay. Michelle, can you help us understand that?
Yeah, so... again, and I don't know the caller's policy either, if she had contents coverage also. But yes, if it is basement, it will cover mostly the big ticket items. It won't cover the finished, like if you have a finished basement, but it will cover, as you heard from the caller, the big ticket items. One of the reasons is that that is a high-risk area, too. Usually in the floodplain, and again, it's kind of between floodplain and non-floodplain, but if you were building in the floodplain, we don't allow basements. So that's some of the reasons why it won't cover your rec room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that finished rec room, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, but the caller did mention she had some difficulty about knowing what the policy, covered and understanding it. FEMA does have the National Flood Insurance Program does have a help center where they do have agents there that you can call, and they can actually look up your flood policy and answer questions or help you find an agent that is knowledgeable in flood insurance. We do see that a lot. Agents across the state, some are more well-versed than insurance agents are more well-versed in it versus other agents. There is a 1-800 line, a helpline for flood insurance. If you would like, I can give you that number.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely put that number at WPR.org/mornings, and we can get that information there. Mm-hmm. And Shelley, thank you so much for that call. We're talking with Michelle Staff. She's the Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator at the Wisconsin DNR. You can join in. Do you have flood insurance? Is it through the National Flood Insurance Program or a private insurer? How has it helped, or did you experience flooding and you weren't properly covered? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle, can farmers qualify under the National Flood Insurance Program?
For crops or?
For the farm, buildings. For their buildings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Any structure can be insured for flood insurance. So you can have ag buildings, you can have your outbuilding, your garage, things like that. Yes.
Who decides when a structure fits into a certain category when you're, in terms of building and zoning?
It is the local community, so usually it's the local building department of the cities, villages, and counties. They are the ones who administer and enforce the federal and state floodplain management regulations.
As you look from your vantage point inside Wisconsin and floodplain management, what is the role of FEMA, and where do you see the, how do you work on the federal level with FEMA on flooding?
I'm the National Flood Insurance Coordinator, and every state has one. And what we do is we're just basically a liaison between the National Flood Insurance Program and the local communities. So when communities join the National Flood Insurance Program, they're actually signing an agreement with the federal government, and we kind of help out. I have, some contacts, and we can help people out. We do workshops. We do educational type issues. We also do a lot of flood recovery after last year's flood. I participated in a lot of community flood recovery meetings to try to, do some recovery and maybe some mitigation options for communities that do see a lot of repeat flooding.
Let's bring in Brett now in Boscobel. Hi, Brett.
How are you doing?
Good. What is your situation?
I had a question. My father-in-law, and he has flood insurance, but his garage, which isn't attached, and is actually up on top of the hill, but we had a lot of water lately, and it came off the hill and blew the back of the garage out and pretty much flooded the inside of it. Is there any kind of insurance for, I guess, for like a garage or something other than your home?
Michelle, go ahead.
Yes, there is. There actually, what you would need to do is talk to your insurance agent and ask for particularly flood insurance on that structure and how much you want to have covered, and you can get a policy for that, those detached structures.
Yeah, even if the structure is detached. As we start to wrap up, what can people do to prepare for or reduce flooding in their homes? What are some preventative steps?
There are some very simple steps we call it flood mitigation, and there's some very simple steps, and then there's some very, I call them more extreme steps. But just simply, moving your utilities from your basement area can help greatly in your recovery process, because, when your furnace and everything is inundated, you are near electrical, you can't, you know, live in your home. You have to get that replaced. And then some of the other mitigation options are elevations of homes, elevating the home to go higher to avoid that flood level, and to fill in basements and doing structural type of work to the structure itself. And we do see people move out of the floodplain, where they actually take their house and they move it to outside of the floodplain.
Moving to higher ground. Michelle, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Michelle Staff is Floodplain Management Policy Coordinator at the Wisconsin DNR. Coming up, you have a line to Congressman Ron Kind. What do you think lawmakers on Capitol Hill need to know about Wisconsin at this moment? We're at 800-642-1234. Back right after this news update, right here on the Ideas Network. We're connecting with Wisconsin's congressional delegation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you have a line to Representative Ron Kind. What are your questions for him? What are your biggest concerns? Is it the impeachment inquiry? Is it health care, the economy, trade, NAFTA? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ron Kind is a 12-term Democratic congressman. He represents Wisconsin's 3rd congressional district, including La Crosse, Stevens Point, Platteville, and Eau Claire. Representative Kind, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Glad to be with you.
Well, before we get started, of course, we're hearing the news. Your colleague, Representative Elijah Cummings, has passed. Would you like to say a few words?
Well, it's a devastating blow. Elijah was a close friend of mine, but he was the epitome of what great public service is all about. This guy came prepared to work every day. He was one of the most honest, ethical, but also one of the nicest colleagues that you could serve with. And, you know, his district, you know, has a great loss today. Our Congress has a great loss. I think our nation does, too. And his legacy is going to resonate in this place for quite some time, I'm confident.
He was a strong civil rights advocate, Baltimore attorney, and head of the House Oversight and Reform Committee. So he was doing a lot of work there.
He did. And not only was he doing important checks and balances and oversight duties, but he was also reaching out to this administration, trying to find areas that we can work on together, such as prescription drug prices and what we can do to bring that down. So this is a guy who knew how to walk and chew gum at the same time. And quite frankly, we need more of that these days in public service.
Before we talk about health care, let's take a look at the impeachment inquiry. President Trump became the 4th sitting president to face an inquiry. Do you support the House launching an impeachment inquiry against him?
Yeah, you know, I fully support investigating this thoroughly. These are extremely serious allegations. But as a former special prosecutor back home in Wisconsin, I know it is important for us to collect all the facts, all the evidence, before we decide what remedy is appropriate under the circumstances. But, Kate, I would hope that we can all agree on this one thing, that it is wrong for anyone to be soliciting a foreign government's effort to meddle in our elections, including some of our most dangerous adversaries. Not only is it unlawful and unconstitutional, it's unpatriotic. And I would hope that we can all at least agree on that base common denominator, that other countries shouldn't be messing with our election process and undermining the integrity of our ballot box. So that's why I think this investigation is important. We need to do it thoroughly and quickly in order to get to the bottom of all this.
What do you make of the House's closed-door depositions right now?
Well, I think it's appropriate because, again, as a former special prosecutor, you do want to interview these witnesses in isolation so that other witnesses can't coordinate their stories. There's talk about bringing them out in a full public forum, but the initial run-through with the initial interviews, I think it's important to do that in seclusion. Both Democrats and Republicans are part of that room. Republicans get to answer or ask as many questions as they want to, so there's balance in these interrogations and these interviews. But for the initial run-through, I think it is important to do that in isolation so that other parties can't coordinate. They don't know what other people are saying. And that's, quite frankly, how you catch people in lies and perjuring themselves. So these other witnesses need to realize that. They don't know exactly what their colleagues are saying. So the best course of action is just tell the truth. Just tell the truth what went on. And and then hopefully Congress can make appropriate decisions with all that.
So based on the House's investigation so far, would you vote in favor of impeaching President Trump?
Well, Kate, you're getting way out ahead of this investigation. I think a lot of people are, quite frankly, and they're prejudging these facts. And listen, I, as someone who went through the last impeachment process with President Clinton, the first casualty in all this tends to be the truth or the facts. We need to guard against that because impeachment is such an important process. It needs to be an absolute last resort. The idea of overturning a national election without exhausting all other remedies first, we need to be very careful with that extreme power that our founders gave the Congress in the Constitution. But it is a serious responsibility, and these allegations are incredibly serious. The potential of a president shaking down another country to get them to interfere in our election process on behalf of their campaign, I think everyone would agree that that's wrong and cannot be tolerated. And yet this president has shown a tendency to do this over and over again, including just overt public statements encouraging Russia, China to do this. These are some of our most dangerous adversaries. And when he sends signals like that, the rest of the world kind of sits up and says, hey, it's fair game. America is fair game. We can come in and screw around with this. And that creates a very dangerous situation. And the situation with Iran, there are deep national security implications with what he was doing, too. And you know, no person is above the law. I was raised to believe that. I do believe that. That includes the President of the United States. So we need to go forward with this.
We're talking about national politics with Congressman Ron Kind from La Crosse. And you can join the conversation. Join in 800-642-1234. What issues in your community should Congress address? What are your top concerns right now? What do you think about the impeachment inquiry or health care or federal trade policies? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Marcus now in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi. So, Congressman Kind, my question for you is, what can Republicans and Democrats do to restore our ties with our traditional allies around the world? And full disclosure, Kate, I went to school in Eau Claire, 98, 99, 2000, and I did help a professor's name was Postal Waite help Ron Kind run for reelection.
Oh, well, thanks, Marcus. It's great to hear from you. And it's a great, great question. First of all, the thing I would put probably at the top of my list is stop these trade wars against our closest friends and allies. I think the president has abused that authority. He's literally declaring countries like Mexico and Canada and the European Union and Great Britain as national security threats to the United States. That weakens us. We do need friends and allies around the globe to advance our interests, but also for the promotion of peace and prosperity. And the president is isolating us by these endless, needless trade wars where these things could be resolved in much better means. And also, I would add, Marcus, is staying true to our word and not abandoning our allies in the field. What he has done to the Kurds is unconscionable. This was the only effective fighting force that was willing to fight and push back against ISIS in the region, so we didn't have to do it. And instead, he betrayed them. We've got Turkey now invading and wiping them out. Our troops now are in full retreat. There is no honor in betraying our allies like that. There is no honor in treating our special forces the way that he has, and there's no honor in the word of the President of the United States when he behaves in this fashion. And that's why this week Congress, in a bipartisan fashion, condemned what the president is doing and moved legislation that would apply economic sanctions against Turkey, given their slash-and-burn campaign that they're engaged in now in northern Syria. Right. It's heartbreaking, and it tells our allies the United States of America cannot be trusted, and that weakens us throughout the globe.
Representative, we saw yesterday House Speaker Nancy Pelosi met with President Trump. It was their first meeting since the impeachment inquiry started, and President Trump disparaged your colleague. We saw Democratic leaders leave the meeting, but House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said Pelosi's behavior was unbecoming, and he had accused her of storming out with what had been, he said, a very productive meeting. Are you worried the polarization on Capitol Hill is dangerous to our country?
I am, Kate, and I think there's more work that needs to go in. And it starts with the American people. They need to start holding their representatives to a higher standard of accountability. We have to expect those that are, that represent us to be grown-ups in the room, to act reasonably, mature, and not be afraid to get in the same room with each other, talk to each other, listen carefully, and find those areas of common agreement that you can work on together. That's kind of been my model in representing my congressional district, my state, for a number of years. It's amazing how much you can get accomplished by doing that. But things are so toxic right now. It's so poisonous that I'm afraid that this might get worse before it gets better, the intense polarization that we see on the political scene. But it's also occurring back home, and that's very troubling. Family members having a hard time having conversations with each other and communities being torn apart. And I believe it starts at the top, and it starts with the president, who needs to set the proper tone of discourse for our country. And then the voters need to be the ultimate judge and referee in all of this, and I hope they'll make wise decisions.
Republicans recently held a rally in La Crosse to oppose the impeachment inquiry, and here is one protester, Anthony Carver, in an interview with WXOW, the local ABC affiliate station.
Ron Kind has no right to overturn the decision we made. We need to just let the people decide in 2020.
Congressman, should Congress just wait for voters to decide next November?
You know, if it were my preference, I'd love to do that. But right now, what the president's engaged in is stacking the deck in this electoral process by allegedly reaching out to foreign governments to tip the scale in his favor for the election outcome. And it's clear that it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, and whether it rises to that level of an impeachable offense, we've got this investigation now looking into to all of this. But also the founders, this was one of their greatest concerns, Kate, when they were forming our young republic way back when, was foreign interference and foreign meddling in our internal affairs. This is what they feared the most might happen. And they gave Congress a remedy for that through the impeachment process if all of the remedies don't really work in this case. So I take the gravity of what we're doing very seriously. Again, this needs to be a last measure, not a convenient political exercise. And thus far, from the committee's jurisdiction, they are treating it very seriously. And I think they're trying to go about this as expeditiously and as fairly as you can. No one, I think, wants to impeach a sitting president. I certainly don't. The best remedy is at the electoral box. But when things become so untenable and there's damage being done to our country now, the founders gave us this remedy.
U.S. Representative Ron Kind stays with us as we look at issues on Capitol Hill that hit home here in Wisconsin. What do you think about the renegotiation of NAFTA and the proposed new agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada? Farmers, how is your business doing? What do you want Washington politicians to know about your economic situation here back home? Be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to Representative Kind in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're covering ground with U.S. Representative Ron Kind on a range of issues. We've been talking about Syria. We've been talking about the House's impeachment inquiry. We're going to be looking at dairy farms and national trade policy and other developments hitting home here. With your comments along the way at 800-642-1234. Congressman, earlier this month, you criticized Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue for saying, quote, the big get bigger and the small go out in response to family farm bankruptcies. If a small farm can't compete in the marketplace with bigger ones, why do you think the government should step in to help out small farms?
Yeah, I'm all for competition, Kate, but I'm also for diversified agriculture to secure our food system. And unfortunately, for too long, I've believed that the scales have been tipped against our smaller family farmers through huge agriculture subsidies in the Farm Bill that go to large agribusiness, to even this bailout money now. And that's what I was criticizing Secretary Perdue about, in part, was the formula that they're using to dish out this farm bailout because of the president's trade war, again, is skewed to the very top. 80% of that money is going to the biggest 20% of the entities. It leaves our family farmers in a very vulnerable position then to compete against the bigger operations. And that's wrong. I think the marketplace should decide that. But because of the powerful special interests and lobbies that exist in Washington, it's large agribusiness that gets most of the attention and most of the taxpayer resources. And it's the heart of our economy, too, back home, Kate. It's our smaller family farmers, not your big mega operations, that have been the backbone of the rural economy and our dairy industry in particular. And it's unfortunate and heartbreaking seeing what's been happening over the last couple of years. I'm not saying that the president's trade war is the sole cause of why we have record farm bankruptcies in Wisconsin, but it's certainly piling on right now. It's unnecessary, and it's been devastating to our farmers, and it needs to get resolved.
Young farmers are concerned that they aren't going to have the capital to actually get into the farm business. And a younger generation is saying, you know what, maybe I'll do something else. Are you concerned about that?
I'm very concerned. I worked hard in the last Farm Bill for a New Beginning Farmer chapter of it in order to provide assistance, technical and resources for that next generation to take over operations or to get into farming. You know, we need to keep this blood circulating. Right now, I'm talking to a lot of older farmers that are advising their kids, get out. There's no life for you here. There's no future in dairy, for instance. And again, that leads to further consolidation in the industry where we're going to wake up some morning completely dependent on a few but very large agri-producers for all of our food needs. And that will jeopardize the food security system that we need as a country and that we worked hard to build up throughout the years.
Let's go to David now, joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, David.
Hello. I wanted to encourage Representative Kind to address what's becoming another facet of health care crisis in his district and Wisconsin and beyond, and that is tick-borne illnesses. I think it's Eau Claire, Wisconsin, is the epicenter of Lyme disease in the U.S., and it's gone underreported, and it's affecting many, many people. I think we need federal resources put into the issue, whether it's research, improved testing, prevention, reporting, everything.
David, thanks for the call. Representative Kind, tick-borne illnesses and addressing it on a federal level.
He's right, and it's real. Listen, I speak from personal experience on this, Kate. You know, most people know I love to bow hunt in the fall, so I'm in the woods a lot. I've had two cases of Lyme's disease myself. Fortunately, I knew the systems. I got in, I got my oral antibiotics in it, and it helped me immediately. But this is a growing phenomenon, not just in the upper Midwest, but throughout the East Coast and New England area. Fortunately, we've got some great providers back home that devoted a lot of attention to this. Gunderson in La Crosse, for instance, one of the preeminent research facilities focusing on Lyme's. But there's a worry, too, that with global warming, this tick-based disease is going to be spreading throughout North America. So I've supported increased funding through the National Institutes of Health. I think we do need more focus on this because of the impact it's having with people and within our healthcare system. And a lot of times it's hard to detect right away, and you get false negative test results back. So there's delayed treatment, and that, too, causes some problems. But hopefully David's in good shape there, and I encourage people to at least know what the symptoms of Lyme's disease are so you can go in, get tested, and get those oral antibiotics right away.
We're talking national politics with Congressman Ron Kind from La Crosse, and you can join the conversation. Let's look at trade here for a moment. Do you support passage of the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement that will ultimately replace NAFTA?
Yeah, we need to get this done. We have to have a good trading relation between our two border neighbors, Canada and Mexico, and they are also our two biggest trading partners. But we also need a good agreement at the end of the day, Kate. And right now, the agreement that was negotiated by the administration was weak on enforcement. It's important that we have strong enforcement mechanisms in it. In case someone isn't abiding by the agreement, we have an ability to follow up then and make sure that they are, or to level sanctions against them if they are cheating in some way. So we're trying to strengthen that portion of the agreement. We've had great labor reform progress with Mexico. They passed historic labor reform earlier this year. They're going to need our help now, technical assistance and otherwise, in order to implement those labor protections and labor reforms. And this is all about elevating standards up to where we are, Kate, so that our workers, our farmers, our businesses can compete on a level playing field. So it is important that we try to find a path to get this agreement done, hopefully sooner rather than later. Those talks are taking place. I'm on the phone with Trade Ambassador Bob Lighthizer every week trying to get these issues resolved so we can have a strong bipartisan support for an important trade agreement.
Well, riddle me this, because there's this controversial inclusion in the trade agreement which provides internet companies like Google liability protection for user-generated content. Does that have any place in a trade agreement?
Yeah, you know, we're working on that too, including with the European Union. It has raised similar type of concerns. But the issue there is whether the content that someone else places on the internet can be used for a liability's sake for these internet providers. And so there's a legal definition that we need to be careful about. How much are we going to hold a company responsible for other people's actions and other people's thoughts? But it has been an issue that's been up for discussion right now. We're trying to work through that as part of the overall, what's called the e-commerce or the digital trade chapter of it. It's important that we have a good digital trade because of the information economy that we're operating in right now. So there's a whole host of issues involved with that, and it's important that we get this right.
Let's go to Dale now in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Dale.
Hi. I just got a kind of little bit of sort of off topic, but a question that's kind of been gnawing at me for quite some time. I'm 58 years old, and since I started voting, and I did vote in 1980, at that time, Ronald Reagan borrowed $36 million from the Social Security Fund for the Star Wars Defense Initiative, guaranteed to pay it back within 10 years at the current interest rate. Bill Clinton borrowed money from the Social Security Fund some years later, promising to pay it back. Congress voted for both. George W. Bush borrowed $2.72 trillion to fund the Iraq War, but no one in Congress since Ronald Reagan has come forth and said, this is how we're going to pay it back. Let's pay it back.
Dale, we are super short on time here, and I want Representative Kind to respond here on the drawdown of Social Security. What do you see?
Well, Congress needs to get off the dime here and take steps that will strengthen and preserve Social Security and Medicare, not only for today's generation, but future generations. And the sooner, the better, so that our back isn't up against the wall. But there's this myth out there that somehow this money is stolen from Social Security. But whenever Social Security ran a surplus, that money was invested in Treasury notes and bonds where it did collect interest. When those bonds became due, they were paid off. Money was used within the Social Security system. It was probably the safest place where you could put any excess surplus that we were collecting from the Social Security system. My concern today, Kate, is the $1 trillion annual budget deficits that this country is running and how unsustainable that is for our fiscal health and for programs like Social Security and Medicare. We're literally borrowing this money, most of it from China, borrowing money from China to distribute to our family farmers in this bailout because they can't sell their product to China anymore. This is how crazy the outlook has become here in Washington. So we've got to instill some fiscal discipline again. And a good place to start is pay-as-you-go budgeting rules. So if you're going to offer an increase in spending or a tax cut, you got to find an offset in the budget to pay for it, to maintain balance.
And
we're
out of time. Congressman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Ron Kind is a 12-term Democratic congressman from Wisconsin. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.